Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. How Pennsylvania's congressional districts are laid out and maps drawn is one of the hot-button issues of 2018. Earlier this year, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled the state's congressional districts were developed by the Republican majority in the legislature to give Republican candidates an advantage. The court ended up adopting their own congressional map. Just last week, Governor Tom Wolf appointed a commission to study ways to make redistricting more fair and free of gerrymandering. A new organization called Draw the Lines PA is addressing the gerrymandering issue head-on and doing it in a way that involves Pennsylvanians in a meaningful way. To talk about all these issues today, David Thornburg, the managing director of Draw the Lines PA. He is also president and CEO of the Good Government Group, the Committee of 70, and Mr. Thornburg is chairman of the newly formed Pennsylvania Redistricting Reform Commission. David Thornburg, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott.
Also, Chris Satullo is the project director of Draw the Lines PA. Chris, always good to talk to you.
Good to be with you, Scott.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, so the latest news when it comes to redistricting, gerrymandering, all those terms, has to do with the governor's commission that was appointed last week. And as I mentioned, David Thornburg, you are the chair of that group. Tell me what the duties will be of the governor's Pennsylvania Redistricting Reform Commission.
Sure, Scott. I mean, first, I'm was honored to be asked by the governor to chair this group. It's a group, good group of thoughtful Pennsylvanians from around the Commonwealth, and I think our the job in front of us is simultaneously pretty straightforward and pretty involved. We want to make sure that we hear from all Pennsylvanians, rural areas, urban areas, suburban areas, red, blue, purple, and otherwise, their thoughts on the redistricting process and the priorities and the values that they care about that the maps ought to represent. And I think the governor is looking to us to give some thought to ultimately the kind of structure that we ought to have in Pennsylvania to draw those maps, which hasn't been changed at least in 50 years. So kind of got to recognize how the world has changed and to see if we can adapt accordingly.
But the commission is there to study and make recommendations. There is nothing that the commission can do, and actually the governor can do, to make your recommendations law, correct?
Sure. I mean, this is an advisory commission, and so our audience, if you will, is ultimately the governor and the legislative leadership. But having said that, I think if we do a good job, and I intend to do a good job, we'll present a fair, balanced, and powerful portrait of how Pennsylvanians look at this issue and what they expect from the redistricting process.
But this is Pennsylvania, and when the governor made this announcement, and since then, in fact, I had one of the House leaders on the program yesterday, Brian Cutler, and we were talking about the Republicans have so far declined to participate in the commission. They said that the governor was grandstanding, and they will not participate in this process. The governor wanted to have leaders from both the House and Senate, Republican House and Senate leaders, and they said so far that, you know, the governor, he can have some input into it, but this is the legislature's job. So will it be truly bipartisan if you don't have leadership from the House and Senate Republicans participating?
Well, look, I will do my best to make sure that the door remains open. I expect to have conversations with the Republican legislative leadership and to see if we can find ways to encourage them to participate. And there are lots of different points of access to this process, and that's what I want to talk about. I take seriously that that this is has to be a bipartisan process, and that ultimately the solution, the move forward, will have to be supported by the legislature. So I'll do my best to make sure that that door remains open.
Well, what kind of those, what would those conversations be if you talk to Republicans, the Republican leadership? And what would you talk to them about?
Well, we're obviously, you know, getting our act together in terms of how the commission is going to operate, but we have choices to make about where we're going to engage Pennsylvanians around the Commonwealth and in what way. I'd like to, as I said, visit folks in so-called red districts and blue districts and somewhere in between districts, and in doing that, I hope to enlist the cooperation of legislators from both sides to make that happen and make sure we have a robust conversation.
There have been, and by the way, we're going to get into draw the lines here in just a minute, but there have been a number of recommendations already made, and one is that a commission, that Pennsylvania's congressional lines would be drawn by a commission that would be bipartisan in nature. It would be taken away from the legislature somewhat, that this commission would be the one to draw the lines. Do you go into this thinking, okay, that's what I want to do, or do you go in with an open mind? I know that's an easy question, but truly, do you go in with an open mind?
Yeah, well, I do go in with an open mind, and I think what we have heard in the last year or so, and I think this draw the lines is one proof of this, is that Pennsylvanians care about this, and we want something better than what we have. We want something that's more fair, that's more transparent, that's more accountable. And frankly, I think there is broad agreement, too, and I think the Republican leadership certainly shares this, that we don't want courts drawing maps and that we don't want outside experts drawing maps. We want Pennsylvania's drawing maps and in a fair and accountable and transparent fashion.
Yeah, I think that's something you can get Republicans to agree to right off the bat, because that was an issue earlier this year when the Pennsylvania Supreme Court adopted a map that was drawn up by outside interest, that they really went nuts over that, and I use that term. You know, they really didn't like that, put it that way. Chris Atolo, you're a journalist, and, you know, we're going to talk about draw the lines here in just a moment, but, you know, you're in a position where you can take a look at this and say that gerrymandering, redistricting, that I've been calling it a hot-button issue here in 2018. Just a few years ago, if we were to talk to someone on the street about this, they, you know, been, okay, what's the big deal? That's not the case now. Why is this such a big issue right now?
Well, obviously, partly in Pennsylvania, it's due to the education activist work of a group called Fair Districts PA, which has been traveling the state pretty much since the 2016 election, educating people. And note, too, Scott, that this just isn't a Pennsylvania matter. This is happening all over the country. In the recent midterms, voters in states as different as Utah, Missouri, Michigan, and Colorado all voted overwhelmingly to change how their states do redistricting. And particularly in Missouri, it's notable that in an election where the Republican candidate for Senate knocked out the Democratic incumbent Claire McCaskill by a huge margin, 62% of people who voted on a ballot initiative in Missouri voted for reform, which means a whole bunch of Republicans voted to radically change how their state does this. So there's a movement happening across the country. Pennsylvania is just a part of it. And it's because people realize that their legislatures, both state and federal, are dysfunctional, are gridlocked, are not getting the job done, are not addressing issues. And they see that gerrymandering is a big part of the problem. We like to call it the bug in the operating system of democracy.
Okay, let's take that one step further. There are people who have said that this is a danger to democracy, that we really don't have a democratic society if voters are taken out of the equation and legislators decide who is going to vote and give advantages to one party or the next. And I should add, when you were talking about across the country being an issue, and it's not just a Republican issue, it is a Republican and Democratic issue. I always point to Maryland, where right, there is a district where you know, Republicans are complaining about Democrats giving having an advantage. So, I mean, is it an exaggeration to say this is a potential danger to democracy?
I think, you know, the list of ills that gerrymandering contributes to are gridlock in legislatures, enhancing the power of narrow self-interest, and definitely voter apathy. If gerrymandering results in elections where people don't have a real choice, or is actually a rational conclusion that my vote doesn't matter, essentially the results are baked in, which was pretty much true of Pennsylvania congressional elections under the old map that was thrown out, well, you can't blame voters for opting out of a system that is clearly rigged so that their voice doesn't matter. So all those things over time erode faith in democracy, and if voters don't believe democracy is real, we're in big trouble.
So let's get back to draw the lines. David Thornburgh, you are the president and CEO of the Good Government Group, the Committee of 70, which has been involved in a number of different issues and causes to improve government and reform government. But draw the lines, PA. What is draw the lines, PA?
Sure. Well, the idea goes back a couple of years and probably started a conversation that Chris and I had maybe over a beer or at least a cup of coffee. And the question was, is there a way to put the digital tools in the hands of Pennsylvanians to not only talk to them about gerrymandering and redistricting, but give them a shot at actually drawing maps themselves? And you know, Chris has pointed out, this is the first time in the history of the Republic that the tools, the computing tools and the data are available at low cost or no cost to people to do that. So we're taking advantage of that fact. And Draw the Lines ultimately turned into a digital competition, a mapping competition, where, again, we're offering all Pennsylvanians a shot at drawing congressional maps. And we have a deadline for submission coming up December 14th. We're getting an enormous groundswell of interest, and Chris can talk more about that. But, you know, this is do-it-yourself democracy. And again, this is a parallel process to the decisions the legislature has to make and the governor has to make, but I think it will inform those decisions. And at the very least, it demonstrates that people are ready to engage in this piece of democracy. They're not just sitting back on their couches and changing channels.
So, you know, you've taken something that I described it earlier as a lot of people really didn't know what it was or weren't very interested, and made it more interesting and made it fun, and you're offering a cash prize for that competition, the winner of that competition. By the way, we have a link to Draw the Lines PA on our website, WITF.org. But I have to admit that this is a lot of fun going in and just drawing your own maps, and you have the tools to do that. Chris, so far, how many people have entered into the contest drawing their own maps?
Okay, so we have more than 1,200 mappers have signed on to our tool, which is called District Builder, and they have begun. They're working on more than 2,300 maps. You know, like every human being, most of our mappers are waiting as close to the deadline as they can actually finish and enter, but we do have more than 300 maps that are completed and entered, so we feel pretty confident we're going to get over 500, maybe more than that. And just so folks know, there's still, you know, a little bit more than a week. We estimate that it takes, once you get used to the tool, we have a video online that teaches you how to use it, it takes 4 to 5 hours to draw a map. So it's not, you know, as simple as Candy Crush or Angry Birds. It's also not impossible. So we have three divisions, secondary school, higher ed, and adult. And in each one of those divisions, there'll be some regional winners, but there will also be statewide prizes in each division, which we'll be announcing in a ceremony in the Capitol Rotunda on February 6th. And if you win the statewide prize in your division, it's $5,000.
See, so there is a cash prize involved, too. But the deadline is December 14th?
December 14th, a week from Friday. Then we will be spending our holidays looking at maps, I think.
Speaking of fun.
Yeah, really, everyone could be better.
No, Scott,
gather around the trees, sing a carol, and look at a map.
Go ahead, David.
You mentioned this in passing, that we're trying to make this fun, and we're seeing people eagerly take up the challenge. There's a great story that Chris added to the website the other day about a family from the Lehigh Valley who's taking this on as a family project. And imagine the dinner time conversations talking about, you know, how the district should look and what do we care about when we draw districts, and then the intricacies of understanding the geography and the history of different parts of Pennsylvania. So we're sparking rich conversations around the Commonwealth that I think ultimately, however this shakes out, is going to improve the accountability and the representation of Pennsylvania's district.
Well, yeah, and
Scott,
go ahead. What were you going
to
say, Chris?
Scott, if I could jump in, I just want to underline two key points of what we're up to. You know, one of the hotly debated propositions in the General Assembly in the state capitol, while the constitutional amendment around redistricting was being debated and ultimately failed earlier this year, was, well, most of the people who run around the state capitol working there think voters are either too apathetic or too stupid to actually do this work. Obviously, the countervailing proposition is, not only is it time to give voters a chance, they're ready, willing, and able. We're essentially conducting a demonstration project in the proposition that voters at this point in time are eager, ready, willing, and able to do this work. And the final point of the project is not just the contest and the prizes and the educational aspect. It's to encourage every person who draws a map to then contact their state elected officials and have a visit either in their district office or in the state capitol, show them their map, and talk about what their ideas for reform would be. You know, we're not jamming any particular proposal or agenda for reform down anybody's throat. We're just saying, go talk to your elected officials and tell them what you think the right way to do it would be. We think that will be very powerful when that begins to happen.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the new organization, Draw the Lines PA, talking about gerrymandering, redistricting. Our guest today, David Thornburg, Managing Director of Draw the Lines PA and President and CEO of the Good Government Group, the Committee of 70. Mr. Thornburg is Chairman of the newly formed Pennsylvania Redistricting Reform Commission. And Chris Satullo is the Project Manager of Draw the Lines PA. We've already gotten a couple of emails here. We're taking your phone calls and your emails. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. We have a listener who asked, what is the registered political party of each person on the commission? Now, David Thornburg, I know you can't run down all 13 members, but there are Democrats. Are there Republicans? I know there are independents like yourself.
You know, I have not checked people's registration cards. The governor made the appointment. It was reported that there are three folks who are of the 13 names so far who are not Democrats. I'm one of them. I'm registered as an independent. But, you know, I guarantee you, as long as I'm chair, we're not checking people's IDs, and this is not about a partisan back and forth. We're going to play this down the middle as best we can.
But at the same time, from a perception standpoint, at the very least, that is important, though. I mean, John Baer in the Philadelphia Daily News has written a column today where he talks about that is one of the complaints from the Republicans in majority in the House and Senate, to say that the more Republicans should be appointed to the commission.
Well, I'm looking forward. We have a job to do. The commission's been named. I hope we can find ways to build bridges with the Republican leadership to get on with the job. So, that, you know, what's done is done, and off we go.
We have a suggestion here. So you're getting a recommendation from a listener already. Dennis says, I follow this debate and discussion in reference to redistricting, and it has gone back and forth in what appears to be the inability to move beyond partisan politics. Therefore, I am putting forth to you this proposal to consider. Number one, registrations of voters by the state will not include any political party affiliation. The state to be directly involved in political parties by registering citizens in those parties, providing information to those parties, and using state funds and resources should be prohibited. Now, I'll add on my own, that would circumvent primaries that are divided by parties right now. Number two, state senators and representatives redistricting should be on a 67-county system. No new maps needed. The state Senate, each 67 counties elect one senator, increasing the size of the state Senate to 67. The state representative, each 67 counties elect at least one representative. Additional representatives will be elected to counties based on each county's population. The exact number of representatives for each county will be divided or determined by dividing 110,000 citizens' population of that county. This would increase the number of senators by 17, decrease the number of representatives by about 20. The plus for citizens, every county will have their own senator, at least one representative. Congressional districts, well, he's got a real long thing here. So I'll just start with what he's recommending here for the state. Now, you are not dealing, the commission and Draw the Lines PA, are you dealing with state legislative lines at all?
Well, let me just say, clearly Dennis has done some homework here, and I hope he will take us up on our offer as we put public hearings and public forums in process, that he can come and share his thoughts with us. An interesting set of ideas that would require a lot of rethinking about how we govern. Just to answer the draw lines question, our intention is to keep repeating this competition between now and 2021, looking at a different set of maps every essentially 6 months. So we've been doing congressional maps this fall. Next spring, we're likely to do the congressional maps, but only 17 rather than 18, because we're pretty much certain to lose at least one seat in the next round of redistricting. And then we'll do the state Senate maps and the state House maps if we're still standing, and if we're able to raise the funding to sustain that. But that's our intent.
Let's take a phone call from Myra in Harrisburg. Myra, you're on the air.
Hey, Scott. Great
Hello,
show.
Myra.
I had a question.
Okay, I don't think Myra is there, but
Myra decided to start her map instead.
Well, quite frankly, she has. Her question is, after the winners are announced with the competition, what happens to the maps?
The maps will be available publicly on our website, Draw the Lines PA, so that anybody can look at them. But our greatest hope is that the people who drew the maps will share them far and wide with their elected representatives and other people who are interested in the issue. Each map spurs a conversation. You know, people who are doing the job are discovering how really tricky it is, you know, because you can enter there and say, well, you know, I'm going to keep equal population and I'm not going to draw any crazy lines like the, you know, famous wandering lines of the old 7th Congressional District. But when you get down to it and realize that there's a constitutional requirement that every district be essentially the same population, there's a lot of tough choices that get made. So people are learning that it's not as easy as just, you know, drawing lines this way and that way and dividing the state 18 ways, but they're also, it leads them to think, as David often says, the fundamental question is, how do I want to be represented? How do I want my government to work? And this is where that whole process starts, and we're really excited to see what happens when voters, for the first time ever, get a chance to just sit down either, you know, in a group or by themselves and think that through and figure out how they make the choices. It's going to be fascinating, and the amount of essentially public learning that's going to go on and a sense of ownership over the process of democracy could be really something, or at least we hope so.
Let's take a call go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to throw in, I mean, some of the most enthusiastic adopters of Draw the Lines are educators. And a lot of folks, I think both on the right and left, are sort of wondering whatever happened to civics education in our schools. And you know, we're getting a great response from high school teachers and college professors, and because, as Chris pointed out, this is a very rich learning opportunity at the very least.
Let's take a phone call from Jim in Enola. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott.
Jim?
I was pretty disappointed to hear
that. Okay, I don't know if we're having problems with the phones here or what, but
we're scaring them off.
I don't think that's it. Actually, the phone lines are lighted up pretty well. Here's some of the other questions that have come in. Someone wants to know, Robert in Millersville wants to know, how does a person become part of the group of 70 and draw the lines, PA?
Go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
The Committee of 70 is a nonprofit organization here in Philadelphia, nonprofit, nonpartisan. We have a board. We welcome folks to sign up for our email and various voter education tools that we have. But as far as Draw the Line, the pool's open to anybody. Drawthelinespa.org is the website. Sign up and start mapping. Simple as that.
This big orange button on the homepage that says Draw Map. Also, we urge people to follow us on social media at Draw the Lines PA. And every day this week and for the rest, the rest of the contest period, there's a different tip on how to get your map done that we're putting out there to sort of help get people over the finish line.
We have someone who has said a suggestion. If this is such a problem all over the country, why not lobby Congress to get rid of the Electoral College?
That's, of course, the Electoral College is something that annoys a lot of people and pleases other people. It is not, obviously, there's a connection because the Electoral College is another result of the way our Constitution originally set up our electoral system. But redistricting is a separate issue. Redistricting is about the shape and nature of the 435 congressional districts. And the Electoral College is just a different way of distributing votes in a presidential election. But redistricting is about how we elect people to the United States House and the state legislature. So they're intertwined issues, but they actually are distinct. And fixing the Electoral College is one thing, but it wouldn't do anything about the problems caused by redistricting.
Had a question here from another listener. It says, not everyone has internet. In fact, we're running a story today on WITF News about how broadband is not available in all parts of the state. Is there another way of addressing the issue without going online?
Well, I'd point out we've had a great conversations with libraries around the Commonwealth, some of whom have staged mapathons, on a Saturday morning or whatever. So that's a good place to start. Again, schools, colleges, universities, community colleges. I mean, we've been working the territory. We probably have what's the number of events and conversations we've had, Chris?
Well, since we formally launched this September 17th, we've had 75 different events in about 20 different counties across the state.
And you're also suggesting mapping parties. And at this festive time of year, you're talking about creating a whole new holiday out there. You guys are really partiers, you know.
That's right. Well, you remember Festivus?
Yeah, I do.
So Map Day can become a thing. And I hasten to add, Scott, as I think you know, that in our effort to make democracy fun, we have also created the signature cocktail of Draw the Lines. It's called the Slay the Gerrymander. It's very tasty, and the recipe for it is also on our website.
Well, you've thought of everything.
Yeah,
so half cocktails and half people make up maps.
Right. Well, we've done it. We've done a few of this. We have a number of activities that we've seen it happen that extremely silver-haired and distinguished-looking adults are channeling their inner fourth grader and sitting at a table with crayons drawing pictures, all in the service of fixing democracy.
Now, if you could just color inside the lines, you would be fine. Yeah. Let's go to Ellen in York. Ellen, you're on the air.
Good morning.
All right. We are having some phone problems today, folks, and I apologize for that and don't understand quite what's going on, but we'll try to fix that. Gentlemen, we only have a few minutes left. I want to thank you very much for being with us. But, one of the things that strikes me, and I keep going back to this, is that this has become such a big issue that you mentioned Fair Districts PA earlier, Chris. We have Draw the Line. We now have the governor appointing a commission. Is this something that Pennsylvania voters will talk to candidates about? Like, when they are talking to candidates or asking candidates questions? I mean, we just went through an election, but will they actually ask and should they ask? So what's your stance on redistricting?
Oh, I think they absolutely are, Scott. And for a variety of reasons, we're at a time in the history of this republic when people are asking questions about what I think of as the rules of the game. I mean, you had a caller talk about the Electoral College. Part of this is we've got a millennial generation that is bursting at the seams and entering the field and asking a lot of questions, running for office and so forth and so on. And then it's the tenor of the times. I think there's a pushback on this, as Chris mentioned, this partisan gridlock, this partisan nastiness. And it's caused a fundamental rethinking of how things work. And so I think more so than any time I can ever remember, these conversations are going on about the rules of the game.
Is this, you know, with the committee of 70, David? I mean, you deal with a lot of issues, making voters' registration easier, ways that Pennsylvanians can vote. Is redistricting more significant than those others, or is it just that it's getting more attention?
Well, there are different kinds of issues. I mean, partly we want to make sure that all voters have a chance to. A fair chance to show up at the polls and have their votes counted. So that's making sort of the existing process work as best we can. But redistricting is more in the lines of, as I said, kind of a rules of the game issue. We're also supporting the idea of opening up primaries to independent voters, which I think would also be a significant step forward. So we sort of work on two levels, as I just suggested.
Mm. Scott, if you got time, if I could just jump in with one more thing. The way we urge people to think about this issue is not in terms of red versus blue, because as you quite accurately stated, you know, when the Democrats get the pen, they're just as bad. We urge people to think about it as, consider the idea that an election is a job interview. In that analogy, who are the bosses conducting the interview? The voters. When we let the most self-interested people in the world, the incumbent elected officials, draw the lines, we're essentially letting them hijack the job interview and decide who they get interviewed by and what questions they're willing to answer. Well, no sane boss in the world of business would let a job candidate do that. Why are we letting these job candidates do that? And as David mentioned, you know, at the top, this is the first time in the history of the nation it's really practical and possible to put the digital tools in the hands of the real bosses, the voters, and let them do this core work of democracy. We think it's high time it happened.
Our guest today, David Thornburgh, Managing Director of Draw the Lines PA, President and CEO of the Good Government Group, the Committee of 70. Mr. Thornburgh's Chairman of the newly formed Pennsylvania Redistricting Reform Commission. Chris Cetullo is the Project Director of Draw the Lines PA. And we do have a link to Draw the Lines PA on our website. If you'd like to take a shot at drawing a map, and we encourage you to do that, go to our website, WITF.org. And under Smart Talk, you can find the link or just go to their website. But, gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, we'll be broadcasting live. It's a Smart Talk road trip from the governor's residence in Harrisburg, and we'll be joined by Governor Tom Wolf. I'm sure the redistricting commission will be one of the topics that will come up, but that is on tomorrow's Smart Talk. We get to hear from the governor, the first lady. Also going to hear a little bit about the history of the governor's residence. That's coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk. At this time of year, when many people think of their finances, they're often concentrating on having money to buy gifts and pay for the holidays. But many should also be thinking about the end of the year. It's coming up in just a few weeks, and steps that they can take to save money on their tax bills next year. So for the remainder of the program, that's what we're going to talk about. Maybe some tips on how you can save money. Joining us is Gene Sahorik, who is a certified public accountant and senior manager at McConley & Asbury in Camp Hill. Ms. Sahorik, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Scott.
Also joining us is Eric McCollum. He also is a CPA, principal at Hudak & Company in Lemoyne. Mr. McCollum, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Scott. Good to be here.
And this is an opportunity for you to ask an end-of-year tax question. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org on Twitter. We are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. And I understand that the phones have been fixed. Don't know what that problem was, but that we should be okay now if you'd like to call in, 1-800-729-7532. All right, so the very first tip I always hear at this time of year is get prepared. Well, okay, it's still not too late, even though we only have about 3 weeks left in the year, maybe a little bit longer than that. There's still time to get your information together. What kind of information, what can you do to prepare for the end of the year?
Scott, it's a great time to do kind of a year-end inventory of where things stand. We're actually doing a lot of tax planning meetings now, both with individual clients and personal clients, assessing where are we at year to date? What are some steps we can take to make things better? So you want to look at things like, are you able to put more money into your retirement plan by year end? Does it, with all the new tax law changes, you know, we're under a new tax system here in 2018, are you going to be itemizing, and does it make sense to bunch those items together, or are you going to be under the standard deduction where that might not be an issue this year? So kind of just taking that year-end inventory, where things stand, can you put yourself in a better position, or does it make sense to even look ahead and also look at 2019?
Gene, what do you advise your clients at this time of year?
Same as Eric. Also, I would like to add that we should be looking to make sure that we have any required minimum distributions taken care of from the IRA accounts.
We'll talk a little bit more about that for those who may not have an IRA. What are you talking about?
You are required after you reach the age of 70 and a half to take minimum distributions from your IRA account. And it is a formula. After you reach 70 and a half in any given year, by the next April, you're required to take your first minimum distribution. And then every year thereafter, you have to make your minimum distribution by 12/31.
Mm-hmm.
But it's based on a formula. The formula is based on your life expectancy and the balance as of the prior 12/31.
My life expectancy or just life expectancy overall?
And honestly,
there are different
life expectancy tables, and it all depends on if you inherited it or whatever.
So it's not going to take weight into control or anything or into consideration. Or
no.
That's good. So Eric, you mentioned lots of tax changes, and I assume you're referring to what everyone else calls the tax cut that President Trump signed into law.
Correct.
At the end of last year. What are some of the major changes?
Big thing. I actually made a list here. You know, we have the 12 days of Christmas. I kind of have the 12 days of tax planning things
You CPAs, man, you are in a holiday spirit, too.
We're so festive today. maybe if you want to do a fundraiser for the program, we'll sing the 12 days of Christmas later. But we can go through. But, you know, we already mentioned that, you know, the standard deduction this year is up to $24,000 for people married filing joint or $12,000 for an individual. So that's going to pull a lot of people away from itemizing their deductions. But you're still going to add those up to see where you fall. Within those itemized deductions, your tax deduction, which are your property taxes and your state and local taxes, there's a cap on that now for this year, capped at $10,000. It doesn't affect the other parts of that, but that tax itemized deduction is capped at $10,000.
Now, is that for businesses and individuals?
That's on the individual side on the itemized deductions, which are on that Schedule A.
Okay.
There's a brand new Schedule A out there, too, if you want to go up and pull it up online. A brand new Schedule A. We find that exciting. Other people may not. One of the other things that we lost that's hitting a lot of people is there's no longer these miscellaneous itemized deductions, which were things like unreimbursed employee expenses. So if you incurred expenses at your job and you're an employee, you used to be able to take those as a deduction. You can no longer do that. You can't deduct your tax prep fees on the individual side. You still do that on the business side, but we lost it on the individual side. So there's a number of things. You know, the child tax credit is now $2,000 per child, and they vastly increased the income range where you can qualify for that. So there's a lot of good things in there. Overall, people should be paying less in tax if they plan appropriately, but there's a number of things to walk down and look at that might benefit taking a look before year end.
Gene, I see you arranging capital gain. I'm reading upside down. Capital gains and dividend tax rates. What's different there?
Well, actually, this schedule is just to show all the income tax brackets.
Okay.
Just in case anybody asked me what the brackets were.
Well, I did have, you know, as I was looking down, and by the way, we'll take some phone calls in just a moment. You know, for some tax tips to ask you about as preparing for the show. Something I saw and I really never heard about, and I don't know whether employers would go for this or not. Of course, you know, I don't know whether there are a lot of employers out there who offer holiday bonuses anymore anyway, but deferring, if you're going to get, okay, whether it's a bonus or whether it's some extra income here at the end of the year, that you defer that to after the first of the year because it could put you in another tax bracket, could have an impact on your income. How do you go about that legally?
I'm not sure that an employer would be willing to do that either. But I mean, yeah, as far as in the tax world, we're always trying to defer income to a lower tax rate year, and we're also trying to bring expenses into a higher tax rate year,
I think it would just be, as you know, when I saw this, I was like, okay, you just go to your employer and say, hey, listen, can you put that bonus off until the first of the year? Of course, I can hear employers saying, aren't you happy for the bonus?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a phone call from John in Ephrata. John, you're on the air.
Hello, John. Yeah, I have a question about...
Apparently, the phones haven't been fixed. So, again, I apologize for that. Let's talk about some of the things that can be done, though. I mean, you've touched on these. Some of the ways that you can maximize your retirement and save in taxes. What are some ways you can do that?
Yeah, and take a look at how much you've contributed year to date, and is there room to put more into the plan by year end? Another strategy also is, you know, the thing you brought up about saving the bonus until next year, you know, obviously there's going to be a conflict there because your employer wants to deduct it this year.
Right.
You want the income next year. So there's a little bit of conflict there, but you might be able to work something out if they write you the check next year. But look at things like if you have a health savings account, you know, you can put... maximize the contributions into there and capture, of course, any employer match on these things.
And with the health savings account, you actually have until April to fund your health savings account.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about that because, again, that was one of the things that I saw: accelerate deductions, defer income. But talking about your health savings account, which many people refer to as a flexible spending account.
Well, they're two totally different
things. Oh, they are. Okay, so talk about that if you would. So, I'm sorry to confuse people. I should just shut up and let you guys do it.
A flexible spending account is something that normally you will sign up for an open enrollment with your employer. And in 2018, the max you could put into that was $2,650. And that's the type of savings account where it's withheld equally across all your pays. You generally can't change that unless you have some sort of qualifying event, same as any other benefit. You can use it as soon as the plan year starts. You can start using the money even though it hasn't even been withheld from you. But that's the type of medical savings plan where it's a use it or lose it. So if I would change employer or whatever, I can't take that with me. And by the end of my plan year, I have to use up the funds. Now, some employers will let you carry over some of the funds to the next year. But it's generally a use it or lose it type plan. A health savings account, it's what we call portable. You could move it from employer to employer. You can't lose that money. It's money you're putting into it. And you can change the amount you're contributing to it, and you don't lose it.
In fact, we had what John's question was, is he's interested in Flex savings accounts, but the employer doesn't offer them. Are they available for individuals?
Probably not. Most of them have to be through your employer, especially on the flexible spending account. And with the health savings account, that has to be tied to a high deductible health insurance plan, which I think they're probably all high deductible these days. But it has to be a qualifying plan with the insurance to have the HSA account attached to it, the health savings account.
When you say yes, I think most people would agree with you that they're high deductible. What do you call high? There are people who think $2,000 is high, but
right.
In comparison to what others are today, that's actually kind of low.
Right. And there is an actual limit off the top of my head. We're looking that up here right now. It's somewhere in like the $2,500 to $3,000 range. We'll get you the exact number. But your plan has to qualify as a high deductible health insurance plan. And then you can tie this health savings account to that. So the two work in tandem. Together.
Buy low, sell low. having to do with if you have some stocks or you have some investments, maybe they've lost something this year. Hey, we had a 799 point loss on the Dow Jones Industrial the other day. What does it mean by that?
So what you want, and this again, is take a look at your investment account and see where things stand here prior to your end. If you have some gains that you need to realize, it might make sense to realize some gains in your account. And you may have some other things that have some losses. You can sell those two again in tandem to kind of offset the one against the other, so you don't get into a taxable situation.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to just evaluating whether it's a good investment or not for where you should be according to your investment strategy, but looking at where things stand, does it make sense to capture that tax-wise this year or push it into next year?
You may be taking a loss on how you're selling it, but
yes.
At the same time, you could have some tax savings to kind
right.
of recoup you
might,
some
you
of
might,
that.
Yeah, you might offset other gains.
Right. All right, so we only have a few minutes left, and I want to thank you. We actually probably could have, I'm sure we could talk much more. But, Gene, general advice for end of year.
As we discussed, I think you should look to see you've done your required minimum distributions, that you are making any charitable contributions that you want to make by the end of the year. You maybe make sure that you spend all your flexible spending account money if you have anything left. If you have a December plan year, I personally don't have a December plan year.
I want to get back to charitable giving because, mm-hmm. let's face it, there are a lot of people who probably give more to charity this time of year. And a lot of people have relied on that for some tax savings. But there actually have been some changes made as far as what you can deduct as far as charity gives. What are the general rules around it?
Well, as we discussed, the standard deduction went up to, for a married couple, went up to $24,000. So you have to look to see, well, if I'm limited to $10,000 on my taxes for an itemized deduction, and then I add in any mortgage interest I have, am I going to spend enough in charitable contributions to get me over that $24,000? So maybe there isn't, I maybe not be able to itemize. I might not get over the $24,000. So then we get to the planning of, well, maybe we can bunch some charitable contributions.
What do you mean bunch some?
So maybe I will plan my charitable giving and give it all in one year as opposed to spreading it over a couple of years.
Okay.
Or we were also talking about you could do a charitable contribution direct from an IRA. To meet your minimum distribution from your IRA,
mm-hmm.
that's also another planning, because if it's directly from your IRA, then you don't have to include it in your income.
I reckon we only have about a minute left.
Okay.
Any changes state-wise this year?
Not too much on the state level. If you're looking at things, some year-end planning, like making a 529 plan contribution.
Most people use for college, yeah.
Yeah, so defunding. And those actually are expanded this year. You can actually use them for private school as far as elementary and high school nowadays. They expanded the definition of what that could be used for. But there is a state tax deduction on there for Pennsylvania. Other than that, it's the state's kind of the same. Most of the tax changes are hitting on the federal level. But as a general guideline, I mean, things are so different this year. any level of complexity, might be a good time to visit your accountant for the holiday season here prior to year end. Have a strategy meeting. If you have any sort of self-employed or business income, absolutely do it. I highly recommend it. You'd be honestly be crazy not to.
Well, and we don't want people to be crazy.
No, we're crazy enough.
No, as I was going to say, we don't need that. Eric McCollum is a CPA, principal at Hudak & Company in Lemoyne. Gene Sahorik is a certified public accountant, senior manager at McConnelly & Asbury in Camp Hill. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we will be at the governor's residence speaking with Governor Tom Wolf and, a couple other people, including the First Lady, about some issues, but it's a holiday season. I'm looking forward to touring the residence tomorrow, seeing it this holiday time, but that's on tomorrow's Smart Talk.